A decade ago, you could count the number of happiness researchers on the fingers of one hand. Today, scientific research into happiness and well-being is a veritable industry. There's a psychology, a sociology, even an economics of happiness. What have we learned?
There's no secret to happiness. It's just it involves a long-term commitment and effort. And it's very similar to fitness and weight loss. So if you need to lose weight, you don't just go on a diet for 3 weeks, you know, and then you're done. You know, you probably have to diet for the rest of your life. And if you're born with what's called a happiness set point, with a baseline for happiness that's low, you need to really put a lot of effort, change your habits. It's really a lifelong endeavor.
Sonia Lubomirsky is a psychologist at the University of California, Riverside. She's winning prizes for her research on how very specific happiness-boosting strategies work. For example, one of the problems she spends a lot of time thinking about these days is a phenomenon psychologists call hedonic adaptation.
You buy a new car or a new couch. At first, you know, you notice it. Like, oh, every time you get into the new car, you think, oh, this is so fun to drive. The moment you kind of stop noticing the new car and you just kind of use it in a mechanical way, you've adapted to it. So what I argue is that hedonic adaptation to positive experiences is one of the largest obstacles to happiness.
In her lab, Lubomirsky tests ways to combat hedonic adaptation, many of which sound like things your mom probably told you. Pay attention. Count your blessings. Cultivate gratitude. Well, it turns out mom was right.
All of these happiness strategies increase the frequency of positive emotions. You know, people feel joyful or curious, interested, affectionate. There's a theory in positive psychology that argues that positive emotions serve as an antidote to negative emotions. They basically help neutralize negative emotions. So with gratitude, for example, you know, you can't really feel grateful and at the same time feel greedy or envious or bitter.
Now, one of my big questions about all the new happiness research is whether it isn't just a little self-indulgent. Compared to other countries, Americans are preoccupied to the point of obsession with happiness. I mean, not only is it enshrined in our Declaration of Independence, at least one survey shows Americans think about happiness, on average, once a day. But Lubomirsky says new research is uncovering some surprising benefits to happiness.
Being happy is not just something that feels good. It's not just sort of a hedonistic thing. But happier people are more successful across a wide variety of domains in their life. Happier people are more creative, they're better leaders, they're more sociable, they're more likely to have fulfilling relationships, they're healthier, they have stronger immune systems, they're more philanthropic, they're less self-centered, actually more other-centered. And so I think that a focus on happiness is not necessarily a bad thing. I think people who are happier might actually be good for the world at large.
Another new direction in happiness research is to go global.
I've been to Greenland, where I worked with Inuit seal hunters. I've worked with tribal Maasai in Kenya. I've worked with prostitutes in Calcutta, with peace activists in Palestine, landmine victims in Cambodia.
Robert Biswas Diener was born to study happiness. His father, Ed Diener, pioneered the study of positive emotions. When, as a young psychology student, Biswas Diener, as he puts it, drank the Kool-Aid and saw the magic of happiness studies, he decided to find out whether happiness is the same for everyone.
If you ask people all over the world, whether it's in Brazil or China or the United States, do you value happiness? People resoundingly say yes. But they do define the experience of happiness a little bit differently. If you look at the Confucian Eastern Rim countries, primarily in Southeast Asia, for example, what they strive for, what they think is an ideal emotion, are things like peace, connectedness, harmony. Whereas, by contrast, in the United States or other Western individualistic countries, we also like positive emotion, but we like it to be a little bit higher arousal. We like enthusiasm, excitement, intense joy.
Biswas Diener is sometimes called the Indiana Jones of positive psychology because he isn't afraid to put his body on the line in the service of happiness research. On one trip to survey the Maasai in Africa, He was having trouble getting anyone to participate in his research. He realized he had to do something to prove himself to the village elders.
I asked them to burn me, much like they burn their own arms and legs, just as a sort of a show of toughness. I asked them to take a hot stick and brand my chest. So I went out into the bush with a group of young warriors, and they started a fire, and they got a stick glowing hot, and they were about to press it into my chest. I took off my shirt, and my translator leaned over just before and said to me, "Oh, Robert, I forgot to tell you, you can't even move a muscle or you'll be branded a coward. You must be completely stone-faced." And so I steeled myself, and they pressed this glowing hot stick into my chest. And to my great shame, I will admit both to raising one eyebrow and clenching my jaw. I think they must have been, you know, kind of generous of spirit to me, because they didn't seem to think that was overly cowardly. And my translator said, "Wow, you did really well, Robert. Now there's only 8 more to go."
The good news is he got 100% participation in his happiness surveys after that. And he found that the Maasai are, by and large, pretty happy. But then, so are most of the people he's surveyed, from the Inuit whale hunters to the Calcutta slum dwellers.
The take-home message overall is that, by and large, most people are pretty happy most of the time.
Economics used to be called the dismal science. But even economists are getting happy these days. In Britain, Richard Layard is one of the founders of what's known as happiness economics, the idea that economic policy should be designed to produce national well-being, which, Layard says, is what the 18th century founders of economics originally intended.
What unfortunately happened in the 20th century is that people lost faith in happiness as something which we could usefully discuss. But the result was, we thought the best thing to do was just to measure the amount of stuff which was being produced. And that's how we got diverted from the pursuit of happiness, which was the Enlightenment goal, to the pursuit of GDP, which was really a betrayal of that ideal.
Layard is part of an international movement pushing for a new measure of economic well-being, GNH, or Gross National Happiness. Pioneered by the tiny Himalayan nation of Bhutan, the GNH movement is dedicated to the proposition that a government's job is to promote not just the wealth, but the happiness of its people. What would it look like in practice? Scandinavia.
The happiest societies that we know from all the surveys are the Scandinavian societies, in which there's more emphasis put on trusting relationships between people and mutual respect than there is, for example, in your country or mine.
It's not just that Scandinavians are nicer people than we are. It's that they have higher levels of trust in each other and in their government. For instance, Layard says, asked whether they think most other people can be trusted in Scandinavia.
Well over 60% of people say yes. In Britain and America, this is now down to 30%, and it used to be 60%. So we've had a big fall in trust in our societies, which I think reflects a growth of excessive individualism. And here's a practical example. The Reader's Digest left wallets with addresses in them in streets in many large cities. In Stockholm, every wallet was returned, which was not the case in London or New York. So there's something real there about the extent to which people feel involved in the fates of other people.
I don't know about you, but I find it both ironic and somehow comforting that in several thousand years, the best piece of advice we've come up with is still the golden rule: do unto others as you'd have done unto you. Or if you really want to increase your pleasure in life, go make someone else happy. We heard from economist Richard Layard and psychologists Robert Biswas-Diener and Sonia Lubomirsky. For more information on their work and recent books, visit our website at ttbook.org.